Hello, I'm Tanuja Randeri, founder of Power Women Network, a network that's committed to developing the next generation of female talent and advancing women in leadership. Welcome to Series 3, Episode 3, 2022 of Power Women Speak, a monthly podcast about what it takes to be successful as a woman in business. We will be sharing career tips and tricks from our network of inspiring women leaders and discuss what needs to be done to address the gender problem in business. You can also order our Power Women Speak research by Dr. Jackie Hatton from our website, powerwomen.org.uk. Today, I am super delighted to welcome onto our podcast, Kerry Coombs. Kerry and I first met a few years ago, I think now, and she was introduced to me actually by a very close colleague of ours as an executive coach and somebody that I would want to connect with. And I have to say, I really enjoyed doing that, Kerry. So thank you for that. Kerry was born and educated in America. She's become really well known in the UK and abroad for her ability to help executives, senior and high potential clients increase their leadership confidence and resilience. And of course, she advises boards and helps them with board effectiveness. Kerry brings to her coaching and board assessment work experience from a career that has spanned banking, investment banking, bank stock research, and management consulting, something we have in common as well. And if I can pull out maybe a few things about the background, Kerry, starting obviously with Morgan Stanley, important part of your career and background, the Mack Group, and then going on to that becoming Gemini Consulting. I believe you were principal there on the financial services side, so long career in financial services, an advisor for almost 8 years to KPMG on the strategic due diligence side of their practice. And then Presta Partners, where you were a business coach, I think, before, of course, founding CK Coombs, which is what you are leading now and today. And then I'd love to also call out two things you're doing, which is phenomenal. Trustee to the Expat Foundation since 2015. And I'm sure we'll get to talk a little bit about some of these during today. Mm-hmm. And then exciting on the sustainability side, with Lassa Loop Recycling, the startup that you're on the board of as well. So welcome, excited to have you, and really looking forward to learning things from your experiences.
I'm happy to share.
Well, maybe I can get us started, Kerry, with the question I always pose my podcast with, which is, what were some of the early influences in your life, people, events, and how did they form and shape your decisions regarding your career?
My grandmother was one of 10 children, and there were 8 women, 8 sisters, and they were all amazing. They were my first feminists. I didn't know that at the time when I was 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 years old, that they were my first feminists, but they were in charge, super intelligent, very creative and innovative, and always earned their own money using their creativity and innovation. They also ran the family finances across their very different 8 households. And they all had a point of view, very strong personalities. My grandmother was the second of the 8. And so she was pretty senior. Some of them came to live with the older sisters when their mother died. So they really set down the bar for what I came to know as a senior woman in charge looked like.
That's amazing. And did you get to spend a lot of time with your grandmother?
I did. I was born in Ohio, where they lived very close to us. There, as probably everyone who's listening, at special times, certain times of the year we spent, but many weekends dropped off. She also was a great creative. So she was knitting, creating, and she ran an upholstery business. I still have the bedspread that she made for me when I was a child, which is very special indeed.
Oh, that's very special indeed. Absolutely. Yeah. There's a common thread in all the podcasts I do where it's usually grandparents or godmothers or parents who are making such a difference that those early experiences make a huge difference. And so what were a couple of things that you might have picked up from her that you then carried through into your own career?
Well, she was a very forthright and opinionated person. She also worked amazing hours. She was up before the crack of dawn and still working at the end of the night. So I have no idea when she or her sisters actually slept. But her work ethic was amazing. She was an immigrant from Montreal. And so, it was really an important signal to me that this is how a senior woman works. And I inherited that work ethic. In fact, my aunt, my grandmother's youngest daughter, was my godmother. Same thing. So I kind of was handed to this other amazing woman who really made a huge impression on my life. And she went back to work. This is my godmother. She went back to work after having her children. And again, the same pattern, working long hours, running the household finances, having a very strong point of view, usually being right, and warm and supportive.
I love that. I love that. And was there a push towards education for you? And how did you make that call? I know that you were at Wellesley College, you have an economics degree, and then on to UCLA to do your MBA. What pushed you that direction?
Well, my father was the first in his family to attend university, and the intent was clear. And he went to university in Boston. He was pretty intent that we would do that too, and so it was. I don't know if I chose Wellesley as much as I was sent to Wellesley, but I was very pleased once it happened. And in fact, by that time, I was living in Arizona, and maybe geographic distribution helped me out a little bit, but once I got there, I made the most of it.
That's wonderful. I also did my bachelor's in economics and an MBA. So that's another conversation for us to have another day. And your first break, Carrie, was there someone in particular that sponsored you? Was it luck? Was it by chance?
I think the first big break was getting the opportunity at Chemical Bank right out of college. That was a big step. That was the big city. That was New York. That was the big guys. You had to put your big girl's pants on. And they trained me in credit analysis. I've been super fortunate to have very good training in all of the organizations with whom I worked, and also my economics degree, et cetera. But Chemical was a different league. And it was very, very good. Unfortunately, I left soon after, probably after 18 months, because I wanted to be in the West Coast near my family. My parents were in Arizona. And so I went off to another bank, Lloyds Bank International, and that got me settled in the Southern California area and also focused on banking.
That's wonderful.
It was really Chemical Bank, I think, that sort of, wow, this is the big time.
And that set you up for the career in banking. I mean,
that's right.
Because you then spent a very long career in banking after that. And right. I mean, having spoken to a number of women in banking and have many friends today as well, those early days in banking were not easy, right?
They were not easy.
What did you need to adapt or change or frankly influence in those days to be able to advance your career?
Well, at that level, being very good at your job.
Yeah.
Making sure that you were doing your job very well. And back to my grandmother's and her sister's work ethic, I was working a lot. But in those two experiences before business school, those banks had broad diversity for the time. There were very, very good, very intelligent women on both the floors that I was working on, in addition to traditional men, but there were very, very good role model women who were inspirational, really, and made it fun. I knew they had my back. So those two experiences were very formative and very promising. And that I knew through the second one at Lloyds Bank International that it was time to get an MBA, because I was doing big deals, taking companies private through their ESOP, servicing mergers and acquisitions and things like that. Those were complicated. And I realized that the lawyers knew more about the deals than I did. And so business school was absolutely the next step. And I went to UCLA Business School because I intended to live the rest of my life in Los Angeles.
Right.
Ha ha.
Post business school, you decided to stay in banking.
That's right. So very heavily recruited into Goldman Sachs, first for the summer associate program, and then Stanley. Yeah. And it was because of my great banking foundation, which I still use. I know what a cash flow is because I learned it in a formative year. So stayed in banking, and the crash happened in 87.
Yes.
So pretty ghastly for the whole world, pretty ghastly for Morgan Stanley. And coming over to the London office, which coincided with my marriage to my British husband.
Excellent.
So that was in 1987, 88. And that was a tough time. Really, really hard for the organization and really hard for everybody in the organization. Pretty scary. And Morgan Stanley had to be pretty ruthless. And it was a pretty hard place to be. You know, looking back, there were, again, great women on the floor who were supportive. But at that point, I was thinking, is this really for me?
Yeah.
And what else is out there? So move to management consulting seemed to be straightforward. And management consulting, the first stop was research-based management consulting. And that was both bank stock research and research-based consulting with a subsidiary of Solomon Brothers. And then on to the Mac Group, which once I stepped into the Mac Group, I knew this is where I belong. This is a fantastic, just wonderful opportunity. And the combination of the banking finance background I had combined with the management consulting training I had was very powerful. And what a great experience to have all of that consulting work on top of understanding finance, understanding the markets, understanding financial services organizations. It's a privileged place to be.
Oh, it's lovely. And look, during the course of your early career and then post MBA, talk to me a little bit about the moments where you doubted yourself and the moments where you questioned why me, or does it need to be me, or did I do that right? We've all done that, right? I mean, help me understand a bit, like, did that happen? And how did you address those situations during your career?
That is just a great question. And every time I anticipated leaving an organization, I had doubts. These were great organizations. And you could see the career path in front of you. But a door opened to move out. Mm-hmm. And I knew that that door was something that I had to take. A couple of times inside those organizations, too, when I made a big mistake. Yeah, we could talk about a few big mistakes. I was on an airline program and we were early days trying to put in place a frequent flyer program. And at the same time, lobbying the EU to turn over frequent flyer programs here. Things can go wrong when you're dealing with the EU. Things can go right when you're dealing with the EU, but that's a tricky stakeholder group. And of course, we were serving the client who was both pursuing a frequent flyer program and trying to lobby the EU to outlaw them. So tricky times, but we did get through it. And then another, oh my goodness, did I really do that? And this will make you laugh. I had to send a very important document overseas. And inside that document was the information for a very large deal involving a client. And I put no one was in the office. It was late at night, back to my grandmother's work ethic. It was very late at night. And I put the amount of the deal on the package. And so they had to get a guard to take that piece of paper with it. And then we got the bill, which was so. And once more, a senior woman said, learn this as an experience. We'll forgive you. Keep trying hard. Keep working.
Oh, that's wonderful. I love that, because I think having that, someone's got your back, and it's a learning experience, right? If you haven't had those, something's not right. I mean, we've all made
right.
Yes.
And it taught me that there are some parts, some characteristics of character in a leader And one of them is forgiveness.
Yes.
Compassion and forgiveness is really, really important. Integrity, of course, but compassion and forgiveness. And I benefited from those from senior management. Yeah. Thank you.
Yes, no, thank you. Actually, I'd love to pick up on that thread, just given your experience, Carrie, on coaching and leadership, advisory and strategy. I mean, back to compassion and forgiveness, is that something that can be learned? Or do you just have to be naturally compassionate and forgiving?
That's a really good question. In my coaching experience, I've learned that someone's family life, primary family, parents and siblings, really does make an important imprint on who they are, as mine did, as yours did. But, and seeing integrity, responsibility, compassion, and forgiveness in the people who were your first leaders, your parents and grandparents, is so important. Seeing how they act with other adults, other people in your life, it really does tell you unconsciously how leaders act, how it is to act when you are a neighbor, when you're a sister, when you're a spouse, when you're a leader. And I was very fortunate that I learned what integrity and responsibility and compassion and forgiveness were up front. And I'm able to recognize it. I'm also able to recognize, and thanks to the psychometrics that we use now, the leadership profiling, I'm able to really get kind of a snapshot of where this executive might be in those and a lot of other, their resilience, their need for recognition, their ambition. Those are all really helpful and they come out in psychometrics, but also they come out in dialogue. As you have interviewed all of these incredible women and you can see their integrity, you can hear about their responsibility and their compassion.
Yeah, no, you absolutely can. And I guess the, you know, follow-on question to that for you is, did you see a shift post-pandemic versus pre-pandemic on the focus maybe of leaders in maybe developing this further? I mean, we all talk about EQ and IQ and I'd love to get, what did you see? Was there a shift?
There was a shift. And the most, we've had some big train wrecks with leaders doing not such compassionate things in the public or semi-public domain to their employees. But really the standout leaders are those who have shown integrity, intelligence about what's going on. And we all knew that we were going to get out of this thing, just a matter of when. And we're very compassionate and forgiving. And in my own coaching, enabling the leaders to be compassionate with themselves and forgiving of themselves for what was going on as we know, lived at work rather than from home. We were all living at work with the kids and the mess and the outside noise and the pajama bottoms. And so I think that we have learned a new compassion. Thank of all of us for learning that new compassion to each other.
Do you think it will live on?
I hope so. I really hope so. And I think this shift toward flexible working, and we'll have to talk about that. Is that a good thing for women and men? Or will it be the mommy track or the parent track or the carer track in a few years' time? We don't know yet. But I hope that compassion and forgiveness, as well as integrity and responsibility, stay in place.
Yeah, there's a real, I really love the thread we're playing through right now. I mean, there is a real risk of what you say as we head back to the office that, and look, I don't know what you're seeing, but it's not a super fast head back, right? Not at all. I know they're all
a tug of war, isn't it? It's like that big rope where there's a team on one side and a team on the other. Please come back. Can't come back yet. It's not very safe. I've learned my flexibility. This is working really well and effectively, as well as organizations saying, maybe we shouldn't get on a plane to Los Angeles for one meeting.
Yeah. And I think that's a really good thing.
Well, That's right. The climate aspect of this and being compassionate about our earth, our home, is really important. And I think we are learning that. And I think that responsible, accountable leaders are embracing that.
Totally. I mean, I see that entirely. We've got a very, very flexible policy, and we're relying on our leaders actually to decide what's right for them and their teams.
Right.
But back to your point about the risks, I mean, I think as we head back in some form, I can see it playing out again, which it's done in the past, where frankly, women are not quite necessarily ready to go to the evening sessions, or, you know, the commuting is a pain. I tried that the other day. It took
That's
me
right.
a long time to get to work. Then I missed two calls in the process, right?
I
do worry about that. And I think it will come down to management to really make sure, leadership, to really make sure that we're inclusive and continue to be quite inclusive, right? I mean,
that's exactly right. And we have to be very careful that people who are working part-time
yes.
really are able, whether they be men or women or in between. I want to respect this non-binary yeah. audience that you may also have on this. All of the people who are out there trying to work as flexibly as they can, but work hard, because we've noticed over the pandemic how efficient we can all be.
Yes.
We can get a lot done. My grandmother's work ethic. We can get a lot done. So there's people are going to have to speak up and say what they need and want. Organizations are going to have to set some boundaries, which the organizations that I am privileged to work with are beginning to do that in a compassionate way. And you're seeing that in your own organization.
Yeah, no, definitely. Definitely, definitely. The world has just changed and
yes.
you know, we have to adapt. But just going back to your career again, if I may, what role, if at all, did mentorship or sponsorship play for you? You mentioned a few times today a number of role models who really supported you. So I'd love to understand that. And I'd love to understand, again, with your executive coach hat on, what do you see as best practices in really being able to embrace that and get sponsors around you? So sorry, two questions in one, apologies.
Well, let me respond to the second one first.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. I'm not trying to avoid talking about, you know, my experience, but I think that people today who are in the sort of hypo and nearing senior management know now what sponsors look like and what mentors look like. I don't think I knew when I was in that place.
Yes.
I don't think there were two in hindsight that I know I didn't recognize when it was happening. However, so back to your audience, the really important understanding of that is a mentor gives completely altruistically their knowledge, their insight, their network, and wants you to succeed. But a sponsor needs you to succeed to work on behalf of them and their agenda and their work. And they will pull you up on their way up and fight for you and bang the table for you. And finding one of those and understanding the difference is really important. And I think that this generation and the generation in their 30s and early 40s really do understand.
That's the best description I've ever heard of that, Carrie. Really, I have. I've heard various things like sponsors open doors for you and or create opportunities for you. But you're right. I like that, to work on behalf of.
Yes.
And actually that is why assignment of sponsors, I love your view on it. People do often say, well, can I get a sponsor? I'm like, well, I'm not sure. But what, you know, tips for our viewers and listeners on the podcast on how to go about this. Well, yeah, how should I find myself that perfect sponsor?
They have to find you.
Mm-hmm.
That's really what happens. It happened to you. It happened to me. Someone comes along and they spot your talent and how it can align with their agenda in the organization. And it usually comes, and it probably did with you, at a surprising time or a rather inconvenient time in your career. What? You want me to go do that project? Extracurricular activity? You want me to go to Hong Kong? You want me to come over to your, but I have this boss over here. So recognizing the sponsor and why that person wants you to come join them. And so I urge all of your listeners to this, to think about when that might have happened in the past and they didn't hear it, that they weren't listening for it, and when they might spot it in the future that someone says, I need you. I need you.
And then really embracing that.
And really embracing it, making it okay with whatever the context is you're moving from or adding it to, because sometimes it's additive to your existing job. And that's been the case sometimes with me. But certainly recognizing it when it comes around, because it could be subtle. Hey, would you like to come work on this project? And it seems a choice. At the moment, but grabbing it and saying absolutely to get back to that work ethic, put a few hours in over the weekend or at night and do that. So that's what a sponsor does. You join their agenda and their path forward. Whereas a mentor, as we've said, a mentor is usually can be inside the organization, but certainly not in the chain of command. And for me, I've been a mentor when I've been outside the organization and may know the organization very well. And then giving, advising, no limit on the time and effort right. I will spend for my mentees.
Right.
Men and women. Yeah.
Absolutely. And did you, I was on my most recent podcast, Alida Rios spoke about surrounding herself or having a tribe. I thought it was a really nice way of putting the combination of advocates and frankly mentors and friends and family and everybody else you need in order to succeed in a career. Did you have a tribe?
Finding your people. Yeah. Finding your people, finding your tribe. Both at the Mac Group in Gemini and in my long run with KPMG, definitely had a tribe. And part of it, in both of those places, I was building the practice in the financial services practice at Mac and then Gemini and then the KPMG strategic and commercial due diligence practice. And then other work that came from my profile there, teaching, coaching to partners and lots of other great projects that I did with them and as an advisor. So yes, I had a tribe. And then when I became an independent coach, I have a tribe too of great associates, a wonderful, incredible supervisor, and people who perhaps I have, who have been my clients, who are both, what do I want to say, hugely satisfied with the coaching that we did together and refer me. So the tribe exists kind of in every situation. And recognizing it is really important.
I love that. I really like that. And I think the one thing I've certainly learned is that the tribes are something you've really got to nurture and feed. It's a learning. If you can't just dip in and dip out. Because then there's no tribe. It's sort of a collection of, yeah, I know.
Right. You have to watch their back, support them, give unselfishly. I've had clients who have called after months or years. Sometimes years, I just need some time. And of course, there's after sale service. And they're part of the tribe. They're part of this network of people who have experienced the great power of coaching and have allowed me the privilege of being on the journey with them.
Given all of the experience you've had with a number of exec leaders, boards, etc., what two or three tips would you offer our listeners? By the way, men and women, because we do have a mix of listeners, which is great, on finding their way, if they choose to, of course, into that executive suite.
Over time, as they proceed from the first job, the first job, lucky enough to get out of university or graduate school, and you're grinding away, you really want to look at senior management and their behavior. And does that align with your values? If something is tugging, whoa, this is a little uncomfortable, unusual, distasteful, or wonderful, transparent, compassionate, integrity all over the place, huge responsibility, you'll know and pay attention to the behavior and the values that senior management is walking. Also understand your own self. As soon as people can do psychometrics. They're cheap and cheerful. They really are helpful to understand what your default behavior, both your best and not so best. The third thing, at whatever junction you are, you should understand the organization's strategy and really understand your place in it and have a point of view about your place in it. Point of view is really important, as in your 20s, few people understand they should have a point of view about their organization or what their organization is doing, but they're going to have their organization written on the back of their t-shirt on their CV for the rest of their days. So having a point of view about that is really good. And I think I would add, unusually, but I think I would encourage people, know if you are in an organization that has a board, find out who those people are. Just read the annual report. That's a really good thing to do, to read the annual report. The last thing I would say is, and I think I'm biased in here, understand the finance. So along the way, no matter what organization, even if you're an arts organization, a entertainment organization, a hospitality organization, they all have financials and you should know what those are.
I love that. That's great. I always get this, one day I'm going to go through all my podcasts and write down all these. And I'm sure there are a lot of wonderful common things.
There are.
And then there are distinct differences as well, which I love. And this is the diversity of our diversity of people, right? And thought, which is so exciting. I super agree on the understand financials, have a point of view. I think it's so important. And it's frustrating when you're talking to folks and they're like, don't know that the results were just announced. So I think it also shows you care and you're passionate. Right. About where you are and to make a difference as well. Given the time, I think maybe I will ask you one more question. We could go on for a long time, but given the time, what is the best tip you ever received from someone and the worst tip you ever received?
I think the best tip I've ever received is maintain your integrity no matter what situation you're in. And that was pretty easy, given, thankfully, my family background and who I was. But it stretches across a great deal of situations. And be generous. Maintain your integrity and be generous. Because the generosity is really easy. And it shows that you care about the person or the people who are in front of you. I think the worst tip I've ever gotten is from someone, I won't describe the situation, but it was generally, if you want to get ahead, you need to leave your husband.
Good Lord.
Yeah. Yeah. My husband had big jobs and he was traveling everywhere and I had to sort of switch and jive in order to support the family. And he was not in a place where he was able or willing to be flexible at the time when our children were small. And I'm happy to say that we are 35 years married.
Oh,
didn't
lovely.
Take that advice.
Oh my God, it's amazing the advice one does receive.
It was from a senior woman, and that's all there is to say.
Oh, wonderful. Yes. Carrie, thank you so much. I've so enjoyed it. Sure. I look forward to many, many more conversations, I hope, together. I hope you've enjoyed it
as
well.
I've enjoyed it a lot. Some of these things I hadn't really thought about in the way that you had asked them. So thank you for giving me the opportunity to think about those and to be grateful from my grandmother to all my sponsors and mentors.
Oh, lovely. Thank you. Have a wonderful day and talk to you soon.
You too.